So, taking up a sitting posture, if you're not already sitting, and it's very helpful in the very beginning of a, say, a formal sitting to, first of all, bring attention to the body sitting here. Trying to be aware of the general condition of the body at this particular time. Not only is it a good way to ground our consciousness, our attention, our mind in the present moment, but also in the sensations of the body at this time that we perhaps notice that sensations are different each time. A different body sitting here. Usually we just assume it's the same body. And actually look at it, you might see some different expressions, different kinds of sensations. Also helps us to develop more awareness of the variety of sensations that may make up this body. And say in particular, so if you can be aware of, say, the degree of relaxation, or if there's any noticeable tension. And if there is some tension, say, increasing, could be an indication that perhaps you're trying too hard, using more willpower than the natural energy of the body. And then are you able to be aware of the energy level in the body at this particular time? Maybe for some people, after the active meditation, they feel quite energized. For others, it might have been somewhat exhausting. But as we observe and just try to be more clear what those conditions are, then it can give us a certain understanding of how to relate to the meditation object. For example, if we notice the body's a bit tired, then perhaps it's not so helpful to close your eyes and just relax too much. You may just fall asleep. Or maybe you need to relate to the meditation object, sensation of natural breathing, in a particular way. Looking at trying to be aware of the more dynamic aspects of the breathing process, where it changes. The inhalation ends, exhalation begins. Or give more attention to the inhalation, which is generally a bit more energizing. If you notice tension in the body, perhaps give a bit more attention to the exhalation, which is a bit more relaxing. We're still using the sensation of natural breathing as the main focus for attention. Sometimes it can be helpful perhaps to review the other sensations that may be present in the body. Maybe that exercise I gave yesterday is moving the attention through the body somewhat, maybe a bit more quickly. Sometimes some of these sensations are not so obvious because we don't give them any attention. Give some attention to your neck and your shoulders and your back and your knees and your ankles. And it may be helpful to maybe make a few adjustments rather than just force the body to assume a certain posture with willfulness. We can be a bit more receptive, listen to the body. Perhaps we can harmonize with it a bit better. And then as we're being aware of the sensation of natural breathing from that point of reference, what's the general condition of the mind? Is the mind reasonably clear, awake, alert, or a bit cloudy, fuzzy, out of focus? What's the degree of calmness in the mind? Slightly calm, moderately calm, very calm. And then if you notice the mind is seemingly calm, you don't need to keep emphasizing the focusing of attention on the breathing. You can allow that awareness, which is settled on the breathing, to expand. Other sensations, broaden it out, moving to other sensations that seem to be more prominent in the body. Expanding that awareness to the feeling tones, pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. And if you do find yourself thinking about them, is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Just go back to the breathing again. Direct experience. You actually won't find a sensation or a feeling tone by thinking about it. Just look directly at it. And gradually it may come into focus. If the mind is reasonably calm, that's the beginning of being aware of the states of mind. If there is some activity in the mind, perhaps it's useful to look at what kind of activity. Memories, thoughts of the future, planning. Already it's Sunday, the retreat coming to an end. Maybe I'm already planning my escape. Maybe I'm already worried about what's going to happen when I go home. Just look at it. Just observe. That's just what's going on. If you find yourself getting pulled into it, just go back to the breathing again. To try to observe the general mood of the mind. It's reasonably easy to see the the activity. But what's the general mood of the mind? The mood is such things as the mind is reasonably uplifted, or it feels a bit confined. The mind is expansive or contracted. The mind is a bit stodgy and lethargic, or it seems to be more flexible, flowing, adaptable. Or if we bring our attention to the very center of the chest, the heart area, maybe we may be able to be aware of, be able to distinguish sort of sensation emotion, lightness of heart, heaviness of heart, warmth of heart, coolness of heart. And it's just trying to bring the light of awareness there, rather than trying to figure it out, analyze it. Just bring attention there. Sometimes it's not very clear, sometimes nothing very noticeable. Let's go back to the breathing again. Sometimes sharpening the awareness, sharpening the focus of attention on the breathing. Then we turn our attention back to sensations, feeling tones, states of mind. Perhaps they become more clear. And if you do notice, say, an unpleasant feeling tone or a state of mind which is perhaps not so comfortable, or you do notice some resistance coming up, probably it's also a similar kind of experience on the unpleasant side of the spectrum. Just see if you can be a little bit more open to it, a little bit more receptive to that experience. Possibly even friendly, a bit more hospitable to it. That's what's there. Do I turn it into a conflict? Do I allow it to become a contraction? Or can I actually have a more open, receptive attitude to it? And see what happens. Heaviness of heart, for example. Just see if you can be a little bit more open to it. See if you can breathe into it, relax into it. Maybe even melt into it. Becomes less hard, less substantial. And if the mind is quite calm, you have to be able to know for yourself, you could even bring up an unpleasant experience, unpleasant memory into that calm space. And see if you can relate to it, respond to it from a bit more of a peaceful place, receptive place. Other times, if you notice a certain state of mind, you can, and maybe just bringing attention to it, just maybe it's not so clear, not so obvious, you can always relate it back to the sensations again. Body-mind are interrelated. The moods in the mind express themselves in the body. Bodily sensations express themselves in the mind. And whenever we feel a bit lost or get caught up with any of these experiences, just go back to the breathing once again. Inhalation, exhalation. You can even notice the changing moods expressed through the breathing process. to the body sitting here once again. Noticing what the condition of the body is right now. More relaxed or more tense. More contracted, more expansive. What's the condition of the mind right now? Degree of calmness, degree of clarity. We're just trying to notice a non-judgmental awareness of those conditions. We find ourselves beginning to judge or analyze, just go back to the breathing again. Allow the direct experience to talk to us. And especially if you notice some contraction in the body or even contraction in your mind, see if you can be a bit more open to it rather than just go with it. So you can shift your mind to being a bit more receptive, open to it, and see what happens to the body and mind. Does it make any difference? Theoretical way, anyway, you've seen this in your experience, when there is usually something like suffering in its various manifestations, physically, mentally, emotionally, the normal reaction is a contraction around it, a resistance, a tightening up. And what this does, if you don't see it clearly, and if you don't have an alternative, it begins to actually objectify. This is a kind of a compulsive activity of grasping. It's like a threat to ourselves, a threat to our being, so we try and hold it, to try and do something with it, control it, or get rid of it. But actually, it turns out that we objectify it. We turn it into something more solid and tangible than it really is. There is a flow of sensations, a flow of feeling tones, a flow of mental activity, and there's some which we designate as unpleasant, uncomfortable, don't like it. And then I try and do something with it, try and manipulate it. The old habit tendency, anyway. Many times, very just unconsciously, it's the habit tendency. Tries to actually hold on to it and do something with it, to get rid of it or push it away. And then you end up objectifying it, and when there is something as an object, you got a subject there. We objectify, then we subjectify. And then what was before just a feeling tone, you know, becomes something like pain, and all the memories come up about it. And then the next thing is, I'm in pain, and the I comes up. And the I is a contraction too. And there's a contraction with a contraction with a contraction. And we're just spun around again and again and again. Back to the old habitual cycles again. But the way out of it is just to recognize this tendency, this grasping, this contraction. And then you can see it and you know what it does to you. You kind of step back a bit. Awareness or even a... maybe this positive approach of friendliness, openness, an open, friendly attitude, at least it doesn't compound that contraction. It tends to at least stop it, maybe even open it up. And when the contraction opens up, then the objectification principle opens up, and the subject opens up. With no subject, who suffers? There just is experience. Sensations, feeling tones, states of mind. There is suffering, basic suffering, but no sufferer. Voila! Of course, you know, we have a long personal history with suffering, so they say the theory is easy. But now actually to put it into practice and see this as it's actually going on, see the process of subjectification and objectification. And when you see that and see what it's doing to you, you get disenchanted. You get discouraged, disenchanted with the whole process and begin to let go then. You maybe find just, you know, in a simple way, you find a bit more openness and spaciousness open in your life. So there still is suffering in a basic sense, but it's not compounded. The more that we grasp it and try and do something with it, the more we objectify it, the more we compound it, actually. It's just self-defeating. So it's important to be able to still actually learn to disengage from it, unravel it, let go of it. And then we have a different attitude, completely different attitude. In a way, the suffering is still there, but it's just basic. Just the way it is. No big deal. We all have our big deals hidden away in our memory, so we got to apply it. And so, if we can keep up the practice, not only in the meditation hall, but try to sustain a certain collectedness and clarity, actually, many times we can learn more about ourselves and our contractedness, not in the meditation hall, where everything's nice and peaceful, but when we get reacted upon. When you go to the kitchen and somebody takes your favorite food, contraction, reaction. So if you can keep up a certain degree of awareness, you can begin to see this. And so much of it is just habitual. It's very hard to catch sometimes. So it requires a certain vigilance. And basically, the more that we can keep connected with this quality of awareness and mindfulness, the more we empower it, the more it begins to infuse our life. And, you know, awareness is the opposite of automatic reactive syndrome. It's ignoring things and not seeing it that just keeps it going. But when you be aware of what's going on, you learn to unravel it and dismantle it. You can actually see that happening in your life sometimes. And maybe sometimes you... can't say when, but maybe then you go to the kitchen next time and somebody takes your favorite food and just openness, receptiveness, may you enjoy that sandwich. And you, hey, I'm not the same old person again. Well, I'm not compounding it. Surprise. No promises, but it's possible.